Welcome to Making Room, a podcast inspiring people to accelerate change by being a catalyst, honoring creativity, and acting with courage. We are making room for the greatest potential of our community.
Welcome back to Making Room. This is such a treat today. We have Brian Baltashevitz here with the Queen City Podcast Network and Balto Creative Media. It hits close to home, Shivani and Brandon, right?
Yes.
It does.
So good to have him on the other side of the table here.
He has been our producer, our architect for this. And one of the things that comes to mind when I think of Brian, he's just a champion for people's voices. They've produced over 50 podcasts. We were at my house when we were recording that night, and we asked why what he's doing is meaningful. I remember him saying it's giving voice to people. And you have just really personified our mission from the collaboration with our PR team and Brandy, who's sitting in the room. And I know you've mentioned collaboration's a big part of what you do and voice. So just want to start right off is that this idea of giving voice and a platform and why personally that's meaningful to you and how you got started in this work.
Sure. So, first of all, thanks for having me. You've taken me way out of my comfort zone, but I appreciate the opportunity, though.
It's John's specialty.
Join the club.
Very, very good at it. It kind of depends on how far back you want to go. But as a kid, I was always infatuated with the radio mostly. So I would listen to Detroit Tigers baseball games with Ernie Harwell and Paul Carey on the radio. And would fall asleep to the baseball games and really always thought the kind of radio was where I wanted to go with my career. Even as a little kid, I just knew what I wanted to do. I was going to work in media. I was probably 8 years old and knew what I wanted to do. Mm. And somewhere along the way, actually probably even before that, I developed a pretty severe stutter and literally couldn't put two words together. Mm. And as someone who probably wanted to go into radio, there's not a lot of guys in radio outside of the Howard Stern show who had a stutter, right? Mm-hmm. So, it was frustrating because I wanted to do this thing, but I realized it probably wasn't going to be possible. And so, flash forward a few years, and we can go into some more, of the details about the kind of what that was like growing up without being able to speak. But I developed a pretty good writing voice, and so then wanted to get into newspapers. And now looking back, thank God I didn't get into newspapers. But I developed a writing voice, and then that kind of led me to journalism school, and then to television production, where I became a news producer. So I was still very much in the storytelling mindset, even though I knew I probably wouldn't be able to do it verbally. At least I was still able to tell stories, and then realized as a television news producer that I could write things that people that I liked and respected could say. So news anchors were saying things that I wrote, and that was super empowering as well. So my infatuation with media started really, really early, in spite of what was, at the time a pretty serious obstacle.
Mm. So, I hear you saying that you kind of turned your interest into something that you could do and empowered yourself to use that medium, whatever it was. What was the moment where you said, you know what, I could do more?
So I was a news producer in Lansing, Michigan. It was actually my second job. And I produced the 6 and 11 o'clock newscast. And I knew that it was becoming time as I got into kind of my mid-20s. It was becoming time where I was going to need to get past this stutter. And it's worse than it is now. I've learned to kind of live with it. It's still, you'll hear it. I mean, there's no avoiding it. There it is now. But I've learned to kind of to really kind of to coexist with it. And so there was just a moment in my mid-20s when I was working as a producer, and I knew that, you know, verbal communication was going to be important if this was a direction that I intended to go in my career, that I was going to have to somehow move past it. You know, I couldn't identify myself as a person who stutters first. You know, I wanted to be a producer. I wanted to be a regular person. And so I gave some thought into how I could do that. And part of my infatuation with the with the spoken word growing up was stand-up comedy. And, you know, I would listen to albums. I listened to Steve Martin. I listened to Bill Cosby albums. I listened to, you know, Saturday Night Live released an album with that first season. You know, I listened to that. I wore the grooves out on all of those records growing up. And so I thought, well, you know, if I'm going to get past this thing and I'm going to stop identifying myself first as a person who stutters, I'm going to do stand-up and comedy. And cool. So I worked up a 5 or 6 minute routine, and there was an open mic night at the local comedy club in Lansing, and it took several months for me to really, you know, kind of get the nerve up to actually do this thing. And I went up and on an open mic night, and people laughed, and they didn't laugh at me. Mm-hmm. You know, I sort of explained. I had to explain in the first minute or so exactly what was going to happen, you know, mm-hmm. and that I am a person who stutters, and this is what's going to happen. You know, so don't freak out if I just stop talking. And I kind of, I didn't realize this until afterwards, but I kind of gave people permission to laugh, mm-hmm. right? As opposed to where, as a kid, people were laughing at me.
Right.
Mm. Now I was telling them that, you know, hey, here's this thing that I carry. We've all got something.
Right.
Here's this thing that I carry around with me. It's okay. You know, I'm okay with it. You can be okay with it too. It gave them permission to laugh. I wrote a couple jokes around it. Actually, one of which I still use, and this is, you know, almost 30 years later, but one of which I still use when I do perform. And that's that, you know, this is supposed to be a 5-minute set, and I only have to write about 27 seconds of actual comedy. So I still use that line, and it still works.
That's good.
And, you know, so giving people permission to laugh with me was real freeing for me. And I think, and I've written about this in a couple different things, but it really, you know, I stepped off that stage a different person 5 or 6 minutes later. And I just had more confidence and figured if I can do that, you know, I can do whatever, you know, it is that, you know, that I need to do. And I went on to do play-by-play for college hockey on the radio. I've hosted talk shows. I've built the podcast network. And I don't say all those things to go, you know, look at all these things that I did. But I say all that to say that if I can do this stuff, whatever it is that you think is holding you back is not insurmountable. It's wow. It's you know, it's something that you can face head on and get past it.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. So I'll share that I know Brian had told us he was a stand-up comedian, and we were like impressed. We're like, are you serious? Because Brian is so serious in studio. And I didn't really believe it, but we filmed on location, the one where we filmed with Britt and LP7. And I walk in a little late, and I'm looking around. I'm like, so, yeah, where are we filming this thing? And Brian's like, you know, over there where all the cameras are pointing. And I was like, wait. And it hit me so fast. Like, wait a second. Brian just got me. But Brian is very funny, and I love your dry humor. Two things that stood out to me in your story was that you very much could have ran away from this issue or tried to conceal it or found a way to just, you know what, I'm not going to follow my what I'm passionate about, but I'm really just going to find a way around it and stick to written media. But you attacked it head on, and not just like I'm going to do spoken word, but I'm going to do it in a venue which I think even us who feel very comfortable speaking without a stutter or stammer would say, I'm afraid to do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And set yourself up for laughter. So it's just very impressive that you did that. And then also just owning this is who I am, this is a part of me, and you can accept it or not, but I'm inviting you in and to laugh with me. So I just think that's really inspirational.
Yeah, you know, we talk a lot about courage on the show, and I think the fact that you were able to have that courageous moment to say, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm going to step out into this space that is wildly uncomfortable, and I'm just going to do it. And the courage to be vulnerable in that moment, right? Because you didn't know if they would laugh or if it would go really well or not. And so to be vulnerable and have that courage to step up. And then my metaphor for superheroes, like you turned that into your superpower, right? So your voice, your voice was was what limited you potentially, or what was the end of jokes or bullying when you were younger, you turned that very thing that might have been crippling into the thing that helps you empower yourself.
Thanks. Yeah, I think it wasn't all, to be honest, it wasn't all just me. My parents were hugely supportive growing up. And this was back, you know, in like the early 70s, where there was not a lot, and there still isn't a lot known. Like, nobody knows what causes stuttering.
Right.
They have no idea how to treat it. You know, everything that they put out to treat it doesn't seem to help. But, you know, this was the early 70s where teachers didn't know how to deal with it. I mean, I was disciplined more often in class because teachers thought I was screwing around than, you know, I would get sent out of class. They'd call my parents. And then, you know, God help them if they called my mom, because, you know, the lioness of the,
Mama Bear comes out.
She would jump to my
defense.
But my parents were hugely supportive. And then I had a speech therapist that I went to when I was a kid. And he said something to me. None of the techniques that they tried to teach you, especially back in the 70s, ever really worked. But what it did... and the more that I talked with him, the more that I worked with him, it just gave me confidence, which I didn't necessarily realize until later, but it was giving me the confidence. And he said something that I'll never forget. He said that I'd had a particularly bad day, and he had said, look, he said, what you have to say is infinitely more important than the way you say it, you know, or the mechanics.
Wow.
Of how you say it. And he said, if anyone has an issue with that, that's their problem, not yours. And it you know, as a kid and maybe 10, 11, 12 years old, it doesn't necessarily sink in. But when I got to be an adult, and even still when adults don't know how to deal with what's happening while I'm trying to talk to them, I always think of that. You know, I think of what you have to say is so much more important than the way you say it. And I've never forgotten that.
Yeah, I'm just, wow. I'm just so moved by your story, Brian. You know, just the courage that you have. And I just remember when we first learned, when you told us about what you had struggled with growing up with a stutter, and what you've done to just put yourself right in the middle of everything. And, you know, I think about, we in society, we tend to label it, right? So it's been labeled something. You know, when I was young, I was a much bigger kid, so I was called names for being overweight, and I think instead of saying I was a different shape, I was labeled something, right? Instead of you people saying, hey, Brian's got a different way of speaking, which is what I'm now, to me your speaking is just broadening my ability to listen, because it causes me to be present and really listen to you and hear and hang on every word, versus sometimes trying to catch up. And I'll say, for me, having someone that, you know, also has grappled with ADHD, sometimes it is hard to listen when people talk a lot. And so what you do, the more I think you've personified what we talk about on this podcast, is that we've got room for all kinds of styles and creativity. There's no categories. And you have done that as a leader who's uncategorized. You can't put me in this, because what I say is more important than how I say it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I got a little, surprise for you here.
You knew he had to have one.
You know, I had some quotes. I'm really struck with that what that teacher did to you you've been doing for other people. And I reached out to a mutual friend, Laura Vinroot Poole.
Oh, gosh.
And Laura, people that know Laura, she's an incredible creative. And What We Wore is her mm-hmm. podcast that's produced by Queen City Podcast Network. Mm-hmm. And she tends to be a woman of few words. And mm-hmm. when I asked how Brian and Queen City Podcast and Balto Creative Media has given her voice, this is what she said. She said, and I quote, "I tend to be a little bit of a daredevil and am pretty quick to jump when dared, but starting a podcast was different. I was not confident in my voice or in my ability to truly listen, or more than anything, I was not sure that I had important things to contribute to the ballooning world of podcasts. Brian assuaged all of my doubts. He made me feel like a viable voice in the space who had important things to contribute, but he also made me understand that I already possessed all the things I needed to do it well. I would never, ever have been able to tackle this project without his easy smile and warm encouragement every step along the way. But don't take that to mean that he's easy. He's very tough on me. Brian has extremely high standards and settles only for excellence and the highest level of performance, albeit achieved through the most kind and gentle encouragement. I feel so lucky to be able to work with him and recognize completely he is probably the biggest key to our podcast success."
Oh, wow. That's an outrageous thing for her to say. But that's very nice to hear. Yeah. I have no idea how to react to that. Yeah, I don't. I have no idea. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that Laura, you know, in particular, her voice in her industry is important. Mm. You know, and I think that she's got a lot of things to say in that industry that need to be heard. And I think that she would have found success, you know, any way that she would have chosen to go with her podcast. The honor is all mine to be involved with What We Wore, but mm-hmm. but she and her team at Capital is, you know, they've built a thing there that is very, very important for that industry. I think a lot of people, particularly women in that industry, need to hear her message. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I in sharing your story, you talk about how you used your voice to be able to follow your dreams, right? But the other thing that this company does is that you're able to, like, help other people find their voice and use their voice in a meaningful way and guide them, coach them into being able to actually deliver messages that they want to say. And so I want you to kind of speak to a little bit of that. How, you know, essentially, you're being a catalyst, right, for mm-hmm. other
sure.
folks to be able to use their voice and have a platform where there might not have been that for them.
Yeah. I think there's particularly I've been producing audio content on the internet since about 2001. So this goes back way before the MP3 file was a widely mm-hmm. used thing.
Napster.
All those things, right?
College days.
Before iTunes, before the iPod.
Yeah.
You know, most desktop computers didn't even have speakers at the time. And, you know, so what we were doing back then, which I didn't realize, but I always kind of felt that online audio would find an audience. And it took, you know, a long time for it to sort of catch up with what I always thought it could be. But I've always thought that online audio could level the playing field. Mm-hmm. You know, that online audio could provide a voice to people, for people who maybe felt, you know, a little left out in that medium. And, you know, so flash forward then a few years, so what, 2006 or so, Clear Channel Radio fires like 50% of their on-air talent across the country. A lot of those people were my friends. Mm-hmm. And so we formed a network called Radio Exiles. And so it was a network made up of professional radio people who had lost their gigs. Wow. Mm. And who could still communicate with your audience, even though, again, podcasting was not a widely known thing. Ricky Gervais had his podcast for a year or two at the time. Adam Carolla launched his network literally the week before we launched Radio XL, something like that. So we were like right on that edge of the podcast movement. And it allowed, in principle, Radio XL has worked. It allowed these radio professionals the ability to continue to maintain contact with their audiences. And it allowed their audiences to maintain contact with what they were doing. So Radio XL has ran for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years until my wife and I moved here to Charlotte. And even a couple years after that. And then we roped in some old Charlotte radio talent and kind of expanded the network to where we were eventually releasing 18 episodes a week and getting around 150,000 to 200,000 downloads network-wide, which, again, this is 10 years ago, which was a big number. And so the network worked in principle. But to your question about really, you know, leveling the playing field is that I knew that if I brought sort of a broadcast mentality to the operation, mm-hmm. but brought in people who didn't have the broadcast experience, that I could coach and I could teach them and I could teach them to be podcasters, even though podcasting and broadcasting aren't really kind of the same thing. They really kind of are. I think the difference is in podcasting, you don't have to be polished. You know, you don't have to be the perfect radio DJ. You don't have to be the perfect news anchor. You can use your voice and it can still be heard, but you have to know how to use a microphone and how to tell a story and what, you know, just because you can create audio online doesn't necessarily mean that you should. And so kind of coaching people and pushing them in the direction that that can help their show be sort of viable and listenable and a thing that people want to consume. And there's a lot of podcasts out there, but, you know, I like to think that the podcasts that we produce are different than most.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you've been incredibly helpful to us in that regard, too. I'll also say, I'll go back to this quote that someone told you that said, what you have to say is infinitely more important than how you say it. And I know your childhood dream was to be, you know, spoken word. And I just imagine if that had turned out, and I'm always fascinated about how life throws us challenges, but redirect us in a way that's even more powerful. If you had turned out, and you may be giving inspirational speeches right now that we would appreciate, but the power that you've given the voice, just the three of us, to step outside of our comfort zones, I think is infinitely more significant. And just think about all the people with Queen City Podcast Network that you're working with, even just the very fact that you're sitting at this table and two members of your team are now having the opportunity to do what you do every day.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's making room.
Yeah.
And so I just think about how much more significant, yeah, you may not be able to say the way you thought you were going to say it and deliver these prolific speeches, but you're allowing all of us to use our voices in a way, and Laura Benrupool and others, and that's so much more significant, I think.
I think there's something sometimes when I say personally, I would come in, what about this? What about a plan? And you'd be like, yeah, just start recording. You know? Yeah.
That's right.
And I think I'm curious for you, because part of one of our goals that we were talking earlier around how we continue to form our mission is for people to say, you know, there's this thing that's inside me, and it's when I'm quiet and still, it you know, I want to do that, but I'm not sure. But, you know, you and we even joked about, you know, having business plans or not, or, you know, yeah. building the plane as you fly it. And so what have you seen for somebody right now who's thinking about something, you know, and they're, well, I don't know if I've got the skills to do that or this, whether it's podcasting or anything, a career shift, you know, what do you say, and how do you get people in the consistency going and just eventually connecting to their own potential?
Yeah. There's always a reason to not do something. You know, so you can always, you don't have to work that hard to talk yourself out of doing a thing.
Right.
You know, maybe it's, you know, oh, should I ask this woman out? Well, no, I'm too tall, or I'm that, you know, I'm this or I'm that, or I don't have a good enough job, I don't make enough money, or, you know, I can't leave the job I've got because of the money I'm making. I'm you know, financially sort of, you know, stuck in this job. And you don't have to work that hard to find a reason to go, you know what, I just can't do that. Now's not the right time. There's never a right time. There's never the right time to have kids. There's never a right time to get married. You just, I think there's a lot about kind of hearing that voice in your head, in the back of your head, and sort of acknowledging it, and then kind of evaluating it. You know, okay, so the voice in my head is telling me this, but I really want to do this. So what happens if I just do this? Right. What could happen on the positive side? What could happen on the negative side? And evaluate, you know, what does your safety net look like? You know, will my family let me fail? Right. Will my friends let me fail? Will, you know, what are the odds that I'm going to end up homeless? You know, so probably fairly slim, realistically. Mm. So rather than focusing on all the reasons that you think you're stuck, focus on the things that can get you sort of unstuck. Mm. And I've you know, in the past, I've walked away from perfectly good jobs to try to start a thing, and it didn't work. And, you know, I still more or less landed on my feet and moved on to the next job. You know, got my feet back under me and then figured out how to do this next thing again and how to turn what ended up sort of, you know, a hobby, podcasting or you know, audio content on the radio, now to my full-time job. And I've built this thing. And you know, so you can't. The key, I think, to all of it is sort of selective listening. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always going to be the voice that tells you, oh, you shouldn't do this because of this. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be family members who are going to say, yeah. What, are you crazy? What about health insurance? What about, you know, well, what are you going to do for income? Well, how much money do you have in the bank? Well, and those are all important things, but it depends on where your priorities are. And if you've got that thing in your head, in your heart, in your gut, that's this thing that you really, really have to do, or a little bit of me is going to die, mm-hmm. then mm-hmm. you owe it to yourself to pursue that thing, right. mm. you know, and to pursue it with everything you've got. You know, and if you have to have a full-time job while you pursue it, that's fine, but then make sure whatever you're doing outside of that full-time job moves you closer and closer forward in that direction. Mm. It's not easy, but it's you know, you have to listen selectively to all the things around you that are pointing to no. Mm.
Mm. Yeah, I wanted to go back a little bit to childhood, and the idea of accepting yourself. So I think a lot of times we will live in fear because of the things that we are not okay with ourselves. And it sounds to me like there was a kind of deep, profound moment where you were accepting of the fact that you had this voice thing and it happened. And so until you were able to accept that, I think it becomes challenging to then pursue anything else or even to allow, you mentioned permission to an audience to say, it's okay, I get it. Like, I'm accepting of it. I'm also allowing you to step into that space, and that takes away some of the fear of what might happen next.
Yeah.
So I'm curious just kind of that idea of acceptance. Before you accept other people, you kind of have to accept what you own, your own.
Yeah, and it's not, it's particularly, you know, I think about like, you know, elementary school, you know, was not an easy.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, and talk about, I mean, acceptance. I mean, you know, all I could think about was, you know, I can't speak. I can't, right. you know, I got stuff to say and nothing is coming out. And one day after a particularly bad day, I think I had been, I don't know what had happened, but something had happened and I came home in tears. I was just, I don't even know how old I was, probably not even 10, maybe 10 or 11, not even that. Came home in tears and just said to my mom, isn't there anything that we can do? You know, at the time there wasn't a whole lot mm-hmm. that we could do. So I'm sure that was tough for my mom to hear. But that's where, you know, that was when they sent me to the speech pathologist, mm. you know, and even though there was nothing physically he did, you know, as I mentioned, he told me things that later on made sense and paid off. But, you know, it's, we talk about I was a full-blown adult before I accepted this, mm-hmm. you know. Right. And to be honest, it's still, I still don't, I hate talking on the phone, mm-hmm. you know, even as a grown man, I don't, talking on the phone is not my favorite thing. Mm-hmm. And that's just because.
I'll email you more.
More text. Even a text. Text. Yeah, it's, I know, especially someone that, you know, I've never talked to on the phone because I know that, you know, I know what this sounds like. Mm-hmm. And if somebody isn't there in the room with me looking at me while I'm going through this, then they're going to go, what the hell is wrong with this guy? You know, if they're in the room with me, ideally they can at least see that I'm, you know, I'm trying to get something out. You know, clearly you can tell that something's going on. But I learned early on that, you know, on the phone that that's not, you know, that's not quite so evident. So talking on the phone is still my least favorite thing in the world to do. The written word is, yeah, is much better. Mm-hmm. Email or text is perfect. The phone is the one app on my phone I do not want to use.
As I heard you say, you know, as a child you said, I don't have a voice. And I think about all the other communities and groups of people who also feel, you know, maybe it's not a stutter, but they also feel like they don't have a voice and have so much to say. It just kind of reminds me of, it's not always obvious, right? We're dealing with groups of people.
Yeah, I agree. And you talked about your parents, which kudos to them because they could have very well have been like, you just need to get over this or you got to get this right. You're react a totally different way and to be supportive. And you talked also about failures, which I think sometimes those are the best tools for learning. Just maybe talk a little bit more about some of the support that you've had, whether it be with speech or just even with trying leaving broadcasting, going into podcasting, starting Queen City Podcast Network, anything. Just what support you've had?
There have been a lot of people who have been willing to overlook this or willing to, you know, look past it to the point where going, you know, oh, this guy's got a little bit of talent. You know, we should give him a chance. Even to my wife, who told me when we first started going out, you know, when we kind of started talking about, you know, my stutter, and she said, I don't even notice it, you know, and that I think it's things like that, you know, too, in addition to, you know, getting up and doing six minutes of comedy, it's hearing from someone who, you know, you kind of care about and who cares about you when they come back to you and they go, yeah, I don't, what are you talking about? I don't even notice it. That's super empowering. When I got out of college, I had applied for a job at a TV station. So there were about 30 students in our graduating class where I went to school, and our the television production curriculum there was very much aimed towards corporate television. At the time, every big corporation had their own video department, and an internship at Ford Motor Company was the one. It was like the top prize for the students in the television production department at Ferris State University, where I went to school. And the school really wanted me to go to Ford. They really wanted me to go to Ford Motor Company, and all I wanted to do was go into broadcast. And I was the only student in that group of 30 who like wanted to go into broadcast. Everyone else wanted to go corporate and chase the money. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't interested in that. So I ended up interning with a public broadcasting affiliate in Bay City, Michigan. And then after I graduated, applied for a job. And I didn't realize this, but one of my instructors at school had written a message. At the time, it wasn't, you know, there was no email at the time. This was way back when the Earth's crust was cooling. He had written either a letter or a card or some sort of message to the hiring manager at this place where I was applying. And he told her, he said, don't let Brian's difficulty in communicating prevent you from hiring him. He's one of the most talented students who's ever gone through this program. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that, I'm sure, because, you know, at the time, I'm 22, 23 years old. There was no way that I'm getting through a job interview in a stressful situation under the best of circumstances. Right. And while being under stress does exacerbate stuttering, it's not, you know, it's a, if I stutter, it's not because I'm stressed. It's because that's just this thing that's going on. So I'm sure that that job interview was probably not listenable. But, you know, I got the job anyway. And I think that, you know, that that instructor, who has since passed away, but that instructor probably played a huge role. I didn't find this out until many years later, but in kind of getting me that first gig and getting me started.
I think that happened. We've talked a lot about that person who just really was there for you, but really, you know, I heard Shivani talking earlier about this new opportunity around childhood obesity, and she knows she's got a resident physician who's interested, and her first thought is, who could, you know, I could bring her with me, and, you know, that person being that for you to say, hey, yeah. I'm going to reach out, I'm going to make, as Brandon says a lot, an intentional connection, a purposeful connection to cause this result to happen. And, you know, I think about, too, your relationship with Ortho Carolina. And we were talking as we were getting ready for this interview, just how much, and, you know, Blair Primus is someone we both know, you probably, you know him a lot better, but he strikes me as someone in the community who's just always been like, no one will listen. The last phone call, and like he's the one that says, you know what, we're going to take this chance, right? Mm-hmm. We really believe in people and this. So tell us a little bit about, too, what that relationship's meant to you and personally him and how he approaches, you know, being an advocate for people and what they're doing.
Sure. So we launched the Queen City Podcast Network in like March of 2018. And it was only five podcasts at the time. I was already involved in two of them. So, you know, I only had to bring in three other podcasts. And the idea was just that we would just cross promote each other and let's see what happens. Everybody's numbers spiked. So we added a couple more podcasts. And then October of that year, so really only 6 months later, Blair was a guest on the Yelp Charlotte podcast, which I was producing with Nikki Wolf, who I worked with at WBTV, and she was the Yelp community manager at the time here in Charlotte. And we had kind of got to talking about the network, and Blair was sort of aware of it. He's a huge believer in podcasts, which helps out a lot. But after that recording, Blair reached out to me and said, how can Ortho Carolina get involved in what you're doing with the network? And it was 6 months after we launched it. Mm-hmm. And there was no plan. There was no notes, you know, scribbled on a napkin somewhere. There was no, we were just making stuff up as we went. And I was like, I have no idea how Ortho can get involved. But give me a couple weeks and, you know, I'll come up with something. And so we had met again, and I pitched him a couple things, and about a week later, Blair came back and said, you know, we'll be your title sponsor. And I knew that it was going to take someone who was willing to experiment a little bit, you know, with their money and who wasn't necessarily afraid to throw their support at this thing, that knowing that we didn't know what we had or what the potential was. And Blair said something to me then about a year later when we met to renew the deal for year number two. We're now in year number three. He said, we don't support things. We don't invest in things. We support people. Mm. He said, mm-hmm. And I just really, really love what you're doing, and I believe in what you're doing, and just keep doing it, and, you know, we'll be there for as long as we can be there. And just having, you know, this thing that we didn't really know what it was. You know, I didn't know what the future held for it. I didn't know if it was a viable business model. Nobody had launched a hyperlocal network in the country. We're still the first one. Wow. And because everybody wants to, you know, everybody wants their podcast to have a global footprint. Nobody thinks, you know, oh, I can have an impact here, even though my podcast is here, you know, is listenable around the world. I can still have an impact here in my own backyard. So to have an organization like Ortho Carolina say, you know, we believe in what you're doing. Here's how we'd like to help you. I'll never forget. We don't exist still 3 years later, you know, almost 4 years later now. We don't exist without Arthur Carolina. Mm. Mm. So it's, you know, it's not lost on me that the Blair's support and Blair's belief in what we're doing just meant the world to what, you know, we're trying to pull off here.
Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks volumes to kind of even the conversations we have about how much more we value people rather than product, right? It's the conversations, it's the relationships that we build in order to move forward or to impact change. Yeah. So I think that's such a beautiful example of that. Mm. I am curious, do you still do stand-up comedy? Because I would not ever do that. I have a fear of trying to tell jokes. My son even has recognized. He's like, Daddy is my funny friend. Mommy. I'll be like, Mom, is Mommy funny? No.
I disagree. You always are making good jokes in here.
Yes. But I'm curious if you still do it.
Occasionally. I haven't gone up, obviously, in a while because of, you know, the state of the world right now. But probably the last time I went up was maybe 2 or 2.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. I still go up occasionally. I like to produce shows. You know, mm-hmm. I like to create opportunities for other comics to go up and mm-hmm. do things that go figure. That Amar Funny, my friend Debbie Millwater, and I created a show called Funny on the Fly that we ran at the Comedy Zone for 5 years. Where when comics would show up at the club, they'd be given a list of 7 topics, and they would have to write a whole new set based on those topics after they got to the show. And it was it's a derivative of a show called Set List that they run at a couple different clubs in LA. But it was really, really fun to produce, and I kind of got to like. Producing comedy shows, and I got involved with the Queen City Comedy Experience and things like that. So I think I'm just ultimately, you know, while I enjoy performing and I like going up, I think I'm just more comfortable being a producer and kind of orchestrating things behind the scenes. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Well, then maybe you can ask about my budding karaoke network where I get to sing all the songs. So I don't know if there's any sponsors out there for that.
Yeah,
is I think that the your idea stand-up routine?
Yeah, that's. See, I told you, you just needed space to share all your great jokes. But I love that about laughter. You know, I was, as we kind of close out today, just the importance in voice, and Shivani, you said it so well, is like there's the in community, as we've talked about, where people. You know, we're in a country where for hundreds of years we haven't listened to what people are saying, and we haven't listened to people's pain and their voice, or said, yeah, but, or wait till this. And I think what we're reckoning with and doing more, hopefully, at a micro and a macro level of, wait a minute, I hear you. Mm-hmm. I see you, and I honor what you're saying, and I may not actually... Sometimes I may do something, I may listen, right? We've had that even amongst the three of us where we're grappling with something, and just to be able to pour out and someone to say, hey, I hear you, and I think what you're doing, Brian, and what you've done for us is that, and the importance of laughter in that. I was listening to his name is Luis Alberto Urrea, and he was saying one of the most human things we can do with each other is laughter. Yeah. And it's really hard to not respect or at least see a person if you just like laughed a little bit with them. And I think it's probably even more needed with all how much seriousness has been going on and just the as part of that. So I'm just curious today as we close the closing thoughts from the crew here, and then, you know, Brian, we'd love to give you the last 60 seconds from today or anything in your story and making room that resonates from the conversation. So Brandon, you go first.
Oh, first. Yeah, I just gravitated to something Brian said, that as a kid he fretted that he couldn't speak. And so someone who was so afraid and concerned that he couldn't speak is allowing so many other people to speak and use their voices. And so that every time someone, whether it's this podcast or many of the other podcasts or anything you produce comedy-wise, you're speaking. That's you. I mean, you helped us, guide us in terms of how our voice. And as Laura said, you were hard on us sometimes. It's like, hey, John, I don't know if Brian really even likes what we're doing. It's like, at the end, he's like, yeah, that was good. But then one or two episodes, he's like, oh, that was really good. Yeah. That was really good. And I was like, okay, we did it. But we really appreciate that. So that just stands out to me. And so just keep doing what you're doing. That's all I have.
Yeah, I mean, I think so much of your story resonates, the three themes we talk about all the time, right? So the courage you had to be vulnerable and the courage you have to take a chance on other people, becoming that catalyst for others to be able to actually use their voice and have a platform to share their stories and share their visions for life. And then doing it in, you know, very creative ways, right? Like before podcast was a thing, you probably were thinking about podcasts, and before online media was a thing, you already had this vision. So kind of thinking differently and then acting on it. So I appreciate that you are doing the things that you do and also give us the platform to be able to share our stories and bring guests on.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll say for me is just the encouragement and the consistency. And when Laura said the word excellence, I was like, that is what your team personifies. You know, I remember when we were talking about cadence and this and that and how we can be strong partners. And you were like, I will absolutely never miss publishing your episode when we've agreed to on Wednesday. And you've delivered consistently on that with heart, with care, with excellence. And it's just really awesome getting to know you today more, and thanks for all you're doing. So we'll give you the last word today.
Sure. First of all, let me say that we've got a great team here. I'm at the network. I can't do it. You know, we're involved with almost 50 podcasts in one form or another. I can't do it by myself and still have a marriage and still sleep and do all the things that you know that I want to do. So the people, Taylor and Tasha, who are here today and who are stepping up, and Liz and Steven, and just, you know, all the folks involved with the network who step up every single day, who know that, you know, this is an imperfect thing at the moment, and you know, we're still very much making it up, and they manage to match my enthusiasm for it every single day, and that's really rare. So I appreciate my team more than I think they know sometimes. But I think we've all got that thing that we want to do, like, you know, we talked about, and there's nothing that can stop you from doing that thing, or at least trying. And I think if you've got that thing, no matter what it is, you know, you owe it to yourself to at least try it, you know. And if it doesn't work, then at least, you know, you'll know that, you know, you gave it everything that you got, and, you know, and for whatever reason, maybe the timing wasn't right. But if you don't try it while you still have time, you know, you're going to live the rest of your life and think, man, I just wish I had done that one thing. And you know, I didn't want to, particularly as I get older, I look back and I think about, you know, what the circumstances were trying to record shows in 2001, you know, with old equipment, and you know, I could tell stories about just loose bare wires hanging down from the ceiling at an arena and trying to get a radio broadcast out of that bare wire hanging from a ceiling in this 1,000-year-old arena. You owe it to yourself to do these things. You owe it to yourself to at least give it a shot and try to do this thing that will feed your soul and that will make working worthwhile, you know, outside of just the paycheck. But if you have that thing, just pursue it, and just don't let that voice in the back of your head tell you no. I don't know if any of that made sense, but
it made a ton of sense. That's what I'm walking away with, and I want to deliver as a challenge and invite our guests and our community today to just think about how you will apply the word listen. Listen to yourself, listen to people, listen to different perspectives, and it might just open your heart to contribute in a way you never thought possible. So the challenge this week is to expand the definition of listening. And we're grateful for all the listeners. We're grateful for you, Brian, our team today. And thank you so much for co-creating this community with us.
We invite you to continue making room with us. You'll find this episode and all of our exciting and meaningful conversations on Apple, Spotify, or really anywhere you choose to listen to podcasts.
Join the Making Room movement and get more info at makingroomwithus.com or follow us on Instagram at Making Room With Us.
Thank you for showing up for us and each other. Until next time.
You are wonderful and full of truth. Just as you are. Just as you are. You are wonderful, so full of truth. Just as just as you are, just as you are, you're welcome here just as you are.